Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, spinal injury survivor and thriver, Ansel Van Horn.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Jude Johnstone. I am Mark Lejeune, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am so inspired by our conversations that we've already been having and are going to be having on the Life Show Changes show today. I have to say that leading up to the show, it's just interesting that I was sent something actually by a new book by one of our past guests, Vicky Mizell, who wrote A Sister's Love, How Family Bonds Can Save a Life. And she shares how the caring for her brother, the time that she spent bringing him back to almost death to life again. And then I heard somebody else speak, and I wrote down some words, and he said something like this. He said, just this week, people that survive horrible tragedies / accidents, etc., in his words, they have a survivor's mentality. That mentality, though, he said, isn't at the expense of the people around them. I thought that was really interesting. He said, and he was saying this for us all as we go through our experiences in life. And right now, some people are having such really dramatic and traumatic experiences, all in different ways. This person went on to say, it isn't at the expense of the people around us. It's working with the people you have around you. We're all in the boat together. I never thought of it that way when it comes to when we're sick, because it seems to be all about us. And maybe it has to be for some, I don't know. But when I was speaking with our guest tonight, I thought, wow, how he included everybody, how he shared other people's point of view and experiences and what they did. I was taken by that. I was really taken by that.
You know, our recent guest, Tiffany Lee Gaston, introduced us to Ansel's story. And from first conversation, everything that you said, there's so much more going on than what's already a miracle of a story. Yet the way it's unfolded for him, the way it's unfolding for us, and what we're going to be able to share with our listeners at a time when everyone needs this kind of inspiration. Just so excited with the opportunity to share this.
Indeed. Well, we've titled this show, thanks to the inspiration of him and his faith, we've titled it By God's Grace, Faith, Grit, Friends, and Family. This is our episode 729. Our interview guest is a spinal injury survivor and thriver. You will hear his story tonight publicly for the first time. Ansel Van Horn, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Ansel, when you answered the phone, when I called you for our conversation before the show, I said, thank you for being here. And by here, I mean here. There's something that's happening that you are bringing an energy, something that is magical. And we got to know you through a very unfortunate experience. Tell us about that experience in so many words.
Well, life changes, right? My life did change on June 26th of last year. We went on vacation with our family and friends, and we got there on the 25th, late in the afternoon. had a good evening, went down by the beach, kind of just spent a good evening together at the house. Got up the next morning early, went and played a round of golf with the boys. Then we kind of hustled back to go out and hang out with the kids, the boys. Each two of my friends, they have two young boys a piece. So the Lawtons have two young boys and the Lundins have two young boys. And we I love hanging out and playing with the kids. And you know, the boys that I didn't have or that I don't have. So anyways, our rush was to get out there and go play with them. They're out there in the water. When we do get back, I change my clothes. I get down there and, I go to get out in the water. I grab myself a boogie board and I realize I have my hat and my sunglasses on. So to my wife, I call her down there to the water. She comes down, she grabs my hat and my sunglasses and tends her way back up to the beach chairs. And I turn around and I hit the first wave. I was actually going to go over it to get another wave. Well, that wave, I'm in about 4 foot of water, had flipped me over. And when it did, I landed on my head and I heard a crack. Now, I wasn't quite sure what that was. I thought I was just hitting my head on the bottom of the ocean, like, you know, like when you get tumbled around from a wave. Well, when I tried to flip myself over, I'm face down in the water and I tried to flip myself over and I realized I couldn't do that. My body was limp and I went, oh my goodness. I broke my neck and I'm paralyzed. And something really strange came over me. I just felt really at peace and calm. And I wasn't thinking of really anything else except for what my next move was. And my next move from that was just to hold my breath. See how long I could hold my breath until, you know, one of my friends flipped me over. So I did that. That time passed. I didn't have any other thought or emotion or anything go through my body other than just waiting. Well, that time passed. I couldn't wait anymore. And I remember saying to myself, well, I guess this is where I die. I guess this is the end for me and this is where I do it. And I said, well, let's go. And I went and took that breath of water in. That was tough. It's like drinking, you know, Jell-O through a straw. That's what it felt like, trying to pull in that water. Body rejected it a little bit. The next thing I know, I was, I had a man's mouth on my mouth. I felt his whiskers. And it was a kind of a weird feeling that was the first thing that I felt. And then I passed out again and I woke up again. I look up and I see my buddy Travis and he's yelling at me and they're carrying me up on the gurney at this time to the ambulance. And I hear him yelling at me, don't you die on me. You stay with us and keep breathing. So right then I knew I was alive, right? So now I know I was brought back and I'm now alive. Well, I pass out again and I woke up in the ambulance at this time. And my arm kind of fell off the gurney because, you know, those things are really small. So my arm fell off of it and I couldn't pick it back up. And I looked up at my friend George and I said, George, I'm so sorry. I can't feel my arms or my legs. And he said to me, he says, just don't worry about that. All I need you to worry about is breathing. Just keep on breathing. And I passed out again. And I didn't wake up until I was back here in the States. And I woke up to butterfly kisses from my wife and my two girls. So that's when I knew then I was okay. And I knew I was home. Yeah, that's the start of it.
Ansel, you have me in tears again. Cause I'm thinking of all the things that you're saying, your wife being there on the beach, and then your friends and I just connected the timeline when you said I woke up again in Arizona. That was days later. Like you had been flown. You'd had surgery. Tell us the next time you woke up, so much had happened.
Yeah, it was actually 2 days later on Tuesday afternoon is when I came home. We were there Saturday. The action happened on Sunday and I was home by Tuesday afternoon. And all that stuff that happened in the background was you know, the doers. I call them the doers because they get after it. And what they were doing while I was in the hospital was nothing left of a miracle. You know, they all went to work. They all started trying to figure out how they were going to get me out of here. First of all, they had to make the decision to have the surgery there in Mexico. So they sat around and they were trying to get me back home first. They didn't know if they wanted to have the surgery there or just to get me back home. So they knew they was in good hands. Well, the doctor came out and my wife's talked to him and said, so if this was one of your family members, what would you do? And the guy said, time is of the essence and you need to do the surgery now. So they looked at each other, Travis and George and my wife, and they decided to do the surgery, which thank goodness they did, because the longer the spinal cord is compressed, once they relieve the compression, the more swelling and the more damage it causes. So having my spinal cord relieved as fast as it did, and it allows it to heal faster. So I think that was a big contribution for them just to even make that decision to do it. It changed my life.
I can't imagine these people who love you, who have been through this trauma of watching you and supporting you the best they can, having to make a decision like that under that kind of stress. One of the other things that is interesting, I mean, there's so much interesting, and as you say, so many miracles and so much to the story. You happen to have had something on you that almost a year later, you were able to ask a doctor whether your heart kept beating or not. Tell us about
that. Yeah, so it was about 10 years ago, my family all have heart issues. So the males in the family all have heart issues. So I was always told to go check out my heart, make sure it's good. Well, I did. I checked it out from some doctor and he said I had 50% blockage in my descending aorta and I needed to watch everything. So that put panic into my heart. So every time I would, I was going to the doctor every 6 months just to have it checked out. Well, I was having some issues. I got everything checked out. My heart is good. There's no plaque buildup. There's 0% chance of having a heart attack, but I was still having some issues. So they put a loop recorder in my chest to monitor the heartbeat. Well, didn't even think of it until I got back home and I actually got out of the hospital. I said, well, I could go in there and they could go check to see if my heart actually did stop or not. And oh my goodness. Yeah. I went in and I was talking to the doctors and they said, no, usually when you drown, your heart stays beating for quite some time. So most likely your heart didn't stop. Well, the guy that did the recording, he went out and grabbed the doctor. They came back in and he says, yeah, your heart absolutely did stop. They just can't tell for how long. But yeah, that loop recorder showed exactly the time that it stopped. And they could even tell when compressions were happening because there was a lot of activity going on right then and there. So interesting.
Wow. Interesting. And some, because the miracles are so many and wow. Because if you were literally dead and drown and weren't breathing, there are complications that go with all of that. Even assuming the person comes back, right?
Sure.
Under normal circumstances.
Sure. They say, well, one of my buddy here, he's a firefighter. And he said, out of the 15 years of him working here in Phoenix as a firefighter, and anybody over the age of 50 typically do not make it through a drowning. And if they do, they have permanent brain damage. So that's a miracle in itself that didn't happen. You know, I don't know how long I was floating in the water. We're thinking maybe 2 minutes. They're thinking, how long was he doing compressions for? He's thinking maybe 4 minutes. So I exceeded that time. If we narrow even down to the slowest amount of time, we think that that's probably what it was somewhere right around there. So that's a miracle in itself. you know, that I just made it through that, you know, and Travis doing the compressions on me. He just told me the other day, is the first I've heard of it, that he was doing compressions and he himself thought that, oh no, I don't know if he's going to come back because he'd been doing it for so long. And he said he told himself that I'm just going to keep going and keep doing the compressions until somebody pulls me off. And then for something happened right there towards the end of his compressions. He heard me make a noise and I kind of groaned. And then I even said Travis's name, and that's when they knew I was back. So crazy. Yeah. Having George and Travis there and Jen Lawton there just pounding on my back and flipping me over and continuing to do compressions and breathing breath into me. And yeah, I couldn't imagine what they were going through.
So you have had, it hasn't been a long time. It's only actually been 8 months, but probably the longest 8 months probably seem like a lifetime, because you've been through so much. Your family's been through much. It's been costly and exhausting. And we talked about earlier, you having time to think, while you're also experiencing pain. Did you feel like you were going to make it through?
You know, I would say the worst 2 weeks of my life, 2.5 weeks of my life, was in ICU. When I woke up, I had tubes in my mouth. All I could do was talk with my eyes. Everybody around me, you know, my family, my friends that were there, that were just so happy that I was alive. And I'm sitting there not being able to move anything. I couldn't move but just a little bit of my left foot, and my left hand would barely move. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, I don't want to live like this. This is not how I want. I've always said that. I don't want to, if something was going to be where I didn't have the quality of life, I don't want to go through this, which was really probably dumb to even think that way, but I did. And then I was sitting there, and I have two choices. I either sit there and give up and say, this is what I accept, or I find something that's going to give me hope. And I think it was the second day when I was in ICU, the surgeon that accepted me in said to me that the doctor in Mexico did an amazing job. Your spinal cord already has fluid around it. It's starting to heal. It'll probably be 2 years. You should have a full recovery, but it's totally up to you. When he said that went, oh, okay. Well, if it's up to me, then I could get this done. I know I could do it. So I think that's what really gave me that hope right off the bat. And then my wife, you know, she stepped up, and she had already quit her job. She already knew that she was in for a road to take care of me, and she was all in. So, you know, that, you know, God gave me an angel in her for sure. So that gave me hope. And then my friends and how they're there supporting me. I would do them injustice if I didn't just suck it up and start putting the work in. And the only way I could do that is day by day. Start taking little things off the list. You know, the first one was get rid of the breathing machine. I had to get that done. I had to get that out. So I remember it was at 4 o'clock in the morning. One morning they came and they take it off every hour for about 15 minutes so I could breathe on my own. And they went to put it back on, the breathing machine. I said, no, I don't want that breathing machine. I don't want it anymore. I can breathe without it. So they went and called my wife and asked her, and they did. They didn't put me on it, and I haven't been on it since. So that was the first one. That was the first big thing to take off. So then I'm like, what's next? I need to get rid of this medication. I can't think clearly. I can't stay focused. So that was the next thing. I had them stop the medication so I could think clearly. The next thing, which was another miracle that brought in, we were really good friends with Amanda Walker, A Walk My Way. She's a business coach, and she came into the hospital and said, I want to help you through this. Mental attitude is probably the only thing that I have right now is my brain. So I needed to start getting that dialed in to help me through this journey. And boy, did she step up. And visualization, me visualizing myself walking again and using my hands again and just being in a normal life. So for the first 2 weeks when I couldn't move, I listened to that videotape every morning and every night, and that kept me motivated. So, yeah.
And so,
lots that kept me going.
And so thank you for sharing this part of your story so far. We'll want to talk more, of course. I don't want to go another minute without saying thank you to Cheryl. That's your wife, right?
Yes.
Thank you to Cheryl. And I want to let everybody, I know that there's a story there and wish we had time to get her on too. There's so much here. I want to let everybody know, at least for now, on Instagram, you can go to Ansel's Army. Ansel is A-N-S-E-L-S, as in Ansel's Army. And you can follow the journey, because there's still a long way to go. We hear a man and see a man. You look great in that picture, by the way, who is standing very strong. I think for himself, his family, his friends, and for all of us, we can't imagine, I'm sure. But and there's still a process. So if you want to know more or support in some way or add something to this story that can help Ansel, his family, or other people be inspired, Instagram for now, Ansel's Army. We'll get to talk more, because this relates to all of us in a way, and Ansel has already mentioned some ways in which it does, from goals to grit and faith and miracles and God, and which we all need in our lives for sure. In the meantime, we'll come back to the conversation with Ansel Van Horn, and then we're going to have our Ask Dorothy segment after a little while, and then we're going to have our music performance guest is going to be sharing some really great stories as well. Jude Johnston, Johnstone, all on the Life Changes Show, and we come back right after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They're dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world, to raise awareness about the issues we face, and most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris. And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe. Have you felt inspired to meditate but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi meditation. Phi meditation helps you harness the power of I am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi beads at phibeads.com. That's Phi, P-H-I, beads.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back. This is our episode 729. We've titled it By God's Grace, Faith, Grit, Friends, and Family, because our guest is spinal injury survivor and thriver, Ansel Van Horn. Ansel, your story is so rich, and your life has some very interesting twists and turns. Just in conversation before the show, what did we find out about your mom and then your dad?
Yeah, well, when I was 2 weeks old, we were in a car accident. I was in the car. So on our way to Flagstaff, and they had an accident, ran into a tree, and I lost my mom. My mom actually put me on the floorboard, and the dashboard covered over the top of me and protected me. And
wow,
ended up losing her life. And my dad, just before my senior year in high school, was on his way back from a rodeo in Vegas, and he was in a head-on collision and lost his life as well.
So I was going to say, you've had no shortage of surprises. So in the challenging aspect, and I have to imagine that contributed to your ability to almost even unknowingly embrace the moment.
Yeah, I think I think all these things that I've been through in my life has prepared me for this moment that I'm going through today. I'm going through the season of my life I'm going through right now. So, yeah, I think I've been being prepped for this. It's like it was meant to be.
So thank you for sharing your story and surviving your story and thriving to this point enough to be able to share it like you have. And it feels like there's so much more that's good that's going to come out of what you have to share. For me, just from the way that you talk about it, and you're not done yet. Like there's like every day you've got something you have to do to make sure that you can go to the next level, right?
Oh, for sure. Every day is a new day, right? So every day I have to get up. I have to set my mind right. And that's what we do. We work on what my mornings look like, my routines. That's going to get me up. So it sets my day up for success. And like I said, I owe that to Amanda Walker for walking me through that. And it does. It truly does help. If you have your mindset right, click out negative thoughts, you plan out your day and you go to work. And then you do it again the next day. Now, they call it Groundhog's Day, but to me, it's a new day every day.
Mm.
I'm just blessed to be able to have that day, to be able to put that work in and do it. So yeah, I'm going to get better. I'll be there. It's going to take hard work, but I'll get there.
So Ansel, someday we hope and pray real soon that you will be not needing to focus on literally putting one foot in front of the other, and mm-hmm. you'll be back to quote unquote a normal life. What, at that point, what do you want to take from all of this experience?
Well, I don't know what God has planned for me. What I do know now, what I'm feeling, is just to share the story. People that I've seen, just this has followed my page. I read the comments every day, and I've changed some other people's perspective on the way that they see things. And it might not just be from what I'm going through with my grit, but the love that my wife shows with me and that I have for her. You see it every day because she gets up and she's living it with me. It didn't happen to me. This accident didn't just happen to me. It happened to to my wife, my family, and obviously the friends that were there with me that are still going through this journey with me. And I don't know what I would do without them.
Mm. So faith, grit, friends and family, and with friends and family, community as well. So let's just, we've got just a couple of minutes, but because those words keep ringing out, tell us in a couple sentences, if you could, what faith, what grit, what friends and family and community is.
Sure. Well, the faith is the faith. I knew God had his hands on me from the minute it happened, because I had peace through the drowning and being awake through it all. I just didn't panic. And all the miracles that has happened, there's so many of them. I wish I could share it all. Obviously, we don't have enough time for that, but there's a ton of them. But when it comes to family, I call that with my brothers and my sisters that were there with me through the whole thing when I was in the hospital, and my wife stands out above all to stay there and love me and cherish me and support me the way that she has. Talking about for better, for worse, for sick or for poor. Boy, she wrote the book. And then community and friends, you know, I say some of my friends are my family, but then I have a broader community out there of friends that I've met along the way. If you just be a good person and treat people kind, it's amazing how they all showed up just showed up while I was here, showed up for my wife and my family, showed up for me every day. I never once, when I was in the hospital, was alone. Somebody stayed the night with me. Somebody was there with me the whole way through all my therapy, through the ICU. And boy, community is huge. It just gives you that hope and motivation to, you want to make sure that they're supporting you, that you're going to do what you have to do to get back to the Ansel that I was. Now, will I be the Ansel I was? No, I'll be a little bit different, but I'm going to be stronger for it for sure, because of the faith, my family, my friends and community. And that's where I'd like to keep it, in those buckets right there, because it simplifies it.
And you know grit, because you were a wrestler in high school, and you know what it's like to be tough and to work out and all of that. This is a grit of a different kind. How is it different?
I don't necessarily think it's different. I think it's a perspective. It's how you look at it. I mean, yeah, my senior year, when my dad passed away, I set all these goals and I was going to do it in honor of him. And when I put it in the paper, I knew that that was going to keep me focused. And all what I did every day is I got up and I went to work, and I stayed focused on every day what I need to do today to be better and to make sure that I was doing everything I could do to reach those goals that I put out for everybody to see. I think that says the same for what I'm going through now. If the grit is grit, you got to get up, you got to go to work, you have to have faith, and the community around you helps support you and push you through. I went through that when I was a senior in high school, and I'm going through it now, and I feel like it's the same attitude and same mindset.
You know, Ansel, I throw around a phrase and get a chuckle once in a while, and it's powered by togetherness, but I've never seen it embodied more powerfully than your story.
Yeah. Community is so huge. I mean, I couldn't imagine being there in that hospital by myself. You know, we walked down the halls, when I'd go down the halls to go to my therapy room, and I'd look at some of the other rooms and there'd be nobody in there, just one person. And that's the patient. And it broke my heart, you know, to see that. But, you know, I don't know what their journey was. I don't know what God had planned for them, but I do know he's got a plan for me.
So Ansel, I'm drawing an interesting, I don't know enough about the story, but I'm drawing an interesting correlation between what you said about the high school experience of your senior year and this moment right now. You said it. So your high school experience, you were doing this for your father, and you said it was the last thing you wanted to do for him, right?
Yeah.
Family. And you went through the grit and you had your faith, and now you're doing it for you, for God, for your wife, family and friends, and all of this community that is connected to you and your story and what you're doing right now. And may it grow, because there's a lot here.
Yes, I just hope for more people to hear. I wish I could share more, because I do have so much more to share.
The miracles are amazing. Things that people wouldn't expect anybody would happen in a million years, because that never happens, and that never happens because it never does, but it did for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you will share more, because I anticipate, as you continue to progress, we're going to be doing a lot of events together.
Awesome.
I can't wait. So with that, Ansel, thank you so much for having the faith, the grit, the friends and the family, and your willingness to share and to grow in this experience.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate you.
And thank you again to Tiffany Lee Gaston for the introduction. Such a great connection. We're so grateful.
And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Allison in Cologne, Germany. Years ago, when you taught your amazing courses here in Germany, you shared with me that I am the power in my world, and I believed you, but I have been in a major slump, and I am not happy with me and some of the choices I have made. I am depressed, and I am unhappy. I am stressed to the max, and I am unable to relax. I am financially challenged, and I am unable to sleep at night. What can I do to get better and take back my power?
Dear Allison, it is so great to reconnect with you. You are indeed a very powerful being, and I know that you can easily correct your present situation by changing your thoughts and your words. Please remember that two of the most powerful and life-changing words we use are, I am. Years ago, I shared with you the phrase, I am that I am, is a common English translation of a Hebrew phrase which translates as, I am who I am. I will become what I choose to become. I am what I am. I will be what I will be. I create whatever I create. So let's remember that whatever we say after we say I am is really what is co-creating our truth and our reality. Therefore, you could start by changing your I am depressed and I am unhappy to I am very happy. You can also say I am relaxed and I easily fall asleep. And perhaps one of the most powerful I ams you could use is this: I am financially secure. I also suggest that you check out the website iammeditations.org and put their amazing advice to use. You can also ask your loved ones to gently and lovingly remind you when you use your words against you. This can not only help you, but them, by making them aware of how our words create our reality.
I am grateful for your consistently wonderful advice, Dorothy. And if any of you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back with our performance guest, BMI award-winning singer-songwriter Jude Johnstone, here on the Life Changes Show online right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back, and our performance guest is BMI award-winning songwriter. She's a singer. She's so much more. I can't wait to get into some of her stories. Jude Johnstone, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you.
You know, Jude, in what you and I had talked about and in how I had gotten to know you, actually through a really good mutual friend of ours, Peter Yandua Hudson, who'd been wanting us to connect in person, and now you're in Tennessee. But that doesn't mean it can't happen. I believe in miracles. I do. So I hope to hear you perform live one of these days. But
yeah, I come to Los Angeles, you know, from time to time. So
I didn't know.
I was just there a couple months ago.
Oh no. Okay. Well, that's good to know. All right. Well, then it will happen sooner than later. And mm-hmm. You actually came to Los Angeles originally. Why?
That's kind of a long story there.
But they're all long stories.
They're all long stories. Again, I'm going to start talking really fast now. No, I came to Los Angeles in 1979. I was discovered by a sax player named Clarence Clemons from the E Street Band and Bruce Springsteen's band. And I was from Bar Harbor, Maine. But anyway, Clarence and I got together, and the band was doing something out there. They took me to Los Angeles so they could introduce me to their producer, who lived in Los Angeles, even though they were Jersey boys. And I ended up, their producer did take me under his wing, and I did move to Hollywood and kind of study under him for a while. He helped me with my songwriting, and it was just very life changes.
Indeed. And your songs have been covered by the likes of Bonnie Raitt and Emmylou Harris, Bette Midler, Johnny Cash, Stevie Nicks, Mary Black. I mean, Trisha Yearwood, and actually award winning. And in the case of Johnny Cash, they use the title of your song for the album, the Grammy winning album of 1997. So you are one of these people, I said when we first spoke, that it seems like you came with a mission, like you were born with a mission and you were set on it from the word go.
Oh, definitely. It seems that I was. The strange thing that happens, though, is that the older you get, and no matter, like, I had a certain amount of success, not as much as like some of my friends that have written, you know, 7 number one songs. I'm just, you know, kind of in the middle there somewhere. But the thing is, the older I get, the more tentative I get, the more withdrawn I get. And when you're young and invincible, you can make stuff happen. And that visualization thing that your former guest was talking about is huge. It's huge. Mm-hmm. And I believed in it. I believed in it to the extent that I believed in magic to that extent. I really did, you know, so that I wanted Don Henley to call me on the phone. I was on my Nordic track. I said, call me Don, call me Don, call me Don. And the phone rang and it was Don Henley. And that stuff happened to me when I was a kid, but it was, and the same with Clarence Clemons calling, but it was because I believed beyond the shadow of doubt that I had the right to be there.
Do you think maybe as some people get older, they've seen so much and they've gone through so much that it's hard to believe in the good stuff sometimes?
Yes. Besides the fact that, you know, I used to make a fairly handsome living just on an album cut a year. You know, like just one Bonnie Raitt cut, one Trisha Yearwood cut. You know, these are records that would sell a couple million records. And even though I was an album cut, not necessarily a single on a record, they sold so many records that I made a living. I could pay my rent for that whole year based on that one song at the end of a record. It was usually the sad song at the end was my starring role. Still is. But I mean, occasionally I would write something that, you know, in Trisha's case was released as a single and did actually go to number one. But that was really rare for me. It is rare for me. So, you know, it's just, you know, the streaming and everything that's happened in the industry has made it so I can't make a living writing songs unless I get a TV placement, a film placement, or a really big number one song. So that's it.
Yeah, the industry has definitely changed for sure. And there is something that I want to ask about that. But let's hear a song first, because I know that there are stories there. I'll ask a little later. So the first song we're going to get to hear, everybody knows, is the Johnny Cash song Unchained, but it's really Jude Johnstone's song. Tell us about the song and your version, and actually the Johnny Cash experience.
Well, I heard that Johnny had recorded this song. My publisher at the time was Bug Music, and a guy that worked for them, Dave DeRocher in Nashville, had called me and said, you know, Cash has actually recorded the song years, but as you know, these famous kind of artists, they record like 30, 35 songs for a project. And, you know, there's only going to be 12 or so that make it on to the thing. So I tried not to flip out and realized that I probably wouldn't even make the record. Then what happened was, because he had recorded it, I contacted his management because he was playing a show in Bakersfield, California. I lived in California, and my husband's people were from Bakersfield, two hours from where I lived. So I thought, I want to go to the Fox Theater and meet Johnny Cash while I have the chance. You know, even if he doesn't do, you know, doesn't put the song on the album, I could meet Johnny Cash, and I just want to meet him. So I got permission to go. I went there with my husband, but at the time, my second little daughter was only about 4 months old, breastfed, had to go with me everywhere, quite squirrely. And so I went to the theater and I said to my husband, listen, you go walk around the parking lot with her so I can go back and meet Cash. And he said, great. And he did that. And then I went backstage. I asked them, the manager came out and couldn't even remember ever, you know, saying that I could see him, and was very aloof. And I said, well, anyway, I think he's expecting me. So he said, okay, come on across the stage and we'll go see Johnny for a minute. So I went on to the bus. Cash is there, totally just like the most incredible person, you know, just so warm and big and fuzzy. And he gave me this huge hug and he said, oh, we're so glad you're here. And his wife, June Carter, was there. And she said, where's your husband? And I said, oh, he's walking the baby around in the parking lot so I could come and meet you guys. And she said, I'm great with babies. Do you want me to go out in the parking lot and get him? I could take the baby so that your husband could come in and meet John. And she was completely serious. And I just thought, my God, who are these people? And I said, no, that's okay, June. That's quite all right. Thank you very much. And then we went back out. I went back into the balcony where I was supposed to be to watch the show. My husband joined me there with my little kid. I nursed her to sleep so I could watch a Johnny Cash show, which I had never seen in my life. And he comes out and he says, he actually doesn't say it. He plays like two songs. And then after he plays a couple of songs, then he suddenly says, "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash." And the audience just freaks out. And it's so cool. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen. But anyway, I just thought it was great. So they're halfway through the show. I've nursed my baby to sleep, but she's still just hanging on me, you know, in the balcony. And Cash says, "I want to introduce you to my friend, California songwriter Jude Johnstone." And I'm like, "Oh my God." And so this big light starts looking for me in the audience. And I pull the kid off me, and then the light just hits me right after that second. And I just sort of stand up halfway and give a wave, you know. And she doesn't awake. And then Cash says, I'm going to play the song that Jude wrote now called Unchained. It's the title track of my new album.
Oh, wow. Who knows? He might not have even decided until he met you.
I doubt it, but maybe. But it was just like, he didn't say a word. I had no idea. My mouth was hanging open. I was just like, "You're kidding me. You're kidding me, man." And so anyway, I went on to win the Grammy that year for the album of the year. So it was just, really, I mean, the country album.
Wow.
And
great story.
It was incredible experience. I'll never forget it. Yeah.
Thank you, Jude. Appreciate that. And now we're going to get to hear your version of your song, Unchained. Pre-recorded here on the Life Changes Show.
I have been ungrateful, and I have been unwise, restless from the cradle. But now I realize it's so hard to see.
Thank you.
Jude John Stone. Jude, thank you so much for letting us share that. Jude John Stone. Go to JudeJohnStone, just like it sounds, .com, and find out more about Jude and her music. And we're gonna find out a little bit more here as we get to talk. And Jude, we're coming up on the hour, but we want to get another song in. We want to get another story in. But I have to ask you, when I asked you something while we were talking earlier today, and I asked a lot of different questions, and then you honed in on this one, and you said, "What I would tell my younger self is this." And I just, in light of what you said, it seems like maybe you feel like you might have been that much more successful, like maybe some of these friends, right?
There's no doubt about it. Yes.
If what?
Yes, if I had been less precious, if I had less ego at the time, I would have done better. There's no doubt about that. You know, you come in, you know, with your guns, and you think like, I got these songs, and I'm so, you know, you're in your 20s and you're just such an idiot and you just don't know, you know, that there's so much more ahead. And you know, I had a lot of great opportunities, and some of which did happen and were fabulous. But I mean, there were a few things that I really regret looking back that would have been, you know, real stepping stones for me had I not been so precious about every word and every note of my songs. When somebody like Stevie Nicks or somebody would want to co-write with me, and she would do something so out there, you know, with something I had given her, that I was like, oh, well, but what, where did it go? Where's the melody? It's so beautiful. And like, you've abandoned it. And I would never do that now. So not saying to just be like, you know, a whore. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, you know, you got to realize there's always another song. And that, you know, if somebody is in a position to really, really help you, give them some leeway, you know, don't be so precious.
Well, thank you for that. Words of wisdom. And we're going to get one more song in before the end of the show. And that song is going to be one that Bonnie Raitt covered. But there's more to the story.
Well, yeah, just I'll try and make that a really short one. I just realized I'd been trying to get Bonnie Raitt. She was my idol as a singer. I was trying to get her to do a song for years. I had sent songs to her people, and she hadn't accepted one. But I had sent this one to her. I knew where to send it. And when I didn't hear back, I knew she hadn't heard it. I felt it in my bones and every part of me that she did not hear that song, because I knew she would do it if she did. And so I told my husband on my birthday, it was February 22nd, 1 year, and I said, listen, I've got to take a 5-hour train down to the Troubadour to hand a cassette of that song to Bonnie Raitt, because I know she didn't hear it. And he said, all right. And I did. And I handed her the song. She walked into the Troubadour. Trisha Yearwood had told me she was going to be there that night in the audience. She sat down right next to me. And she said, hey, you know what? You sent me a cassette recently of a thing, and I was leaving on the road, and I, you know what? I couldn't for the life of me find it again. I never got to hear it. And I said, that's all right. I happen to have it right here with me.
Good for you.
And I handed it to her. And a couple days later, she called me and said, I've got to record this song.
And record it she did.
Yeah.
And record it she did. Well, here is, was there one more piece, something about playing something in your version? Did somebody play
something? Oh, no, I was going to say the song you just heard of my version of Unchained, Bonnie Raitt is playing the slide and singing the background vocals on that.
Isn't that amazing? That's amazing. Well, and now...
Yeah, those were some of the things that transpired after, you know, we connected.
Nice, nice. Well, and here is Jude Johnstone's pre-recorded original song that was covered by Bonnie Raitt, Wounded Heart, on the Life Changes Show.
It cannot rise above.
Jude Johnstone. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Really quickly, was that our friend Peter playing the viola on that song or no?
No, it's a guy here in Nashville.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Cello.
Oh, it's cello. Okay.
John Catchings. John Catchings is playing cello. Trisha Yearwood's producer produced the track here in Nashville, my first album, and that's Jackson Browne singing the background vocal.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm glad that came up. Well, thank you for sharing that. So Jude Johnstone, exactly like it sounds, judejohnstone.com is where you can find out more about Jude. And Jude, tell us real quickly also, what is the name of the podcast that you and your daughter are doing that I've started to listen to?
It's called Book of Jude, and it's on all the podcast stations. It's an orange square. Just look at it. It's not the biblical ones that'll come up. So it's the one that says, co-hosted by Ray Duncan, who's my daughter. And it's really worth your time. Honest to goodness, it really is.
I've started listening to it. It's a lot of fun and some great stories. Jude, thank you so much for sharing with us in the way that you did and sharing your music. We appreciate you.
I love to be called upon in any regard.
Okay, well, it's great to connect with you. All the best, Jude Johnstone. Thank you so much. And again, a big thank you to our interview guest, Ansel Van Horn, and all the best to him. And with that, that is our show for tonight. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Leger, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, as ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com. On Facebook at The Life Changes Show and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.